Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to everyone who's stuck with us, supported us directly over the last few weeks where we've had a little bit of a summer break. Just for the price of a coffee or maybe a couple of coffees, one each, one for Ian and I, a month or so, you can get our full-length show, has no ads, listen live, chat with us live, get our extra message, sister show, and a whole lot more. In fact, on the show just before we started recording, we had a rather fascinating chat about, well, everything, didn't we? Technical death metal.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say everything, but definitely we talked about Guns N' Roses and technical death metal.
Yeah, and a whole lot more besides. So we may put that out as an extra message as well. But anyway, it's good to be back here, and I'm sorry that we had a little bit of an unplanned break, but summer
That's
is...
okay.
What summer is.
I mean, we do tend to have a yearly break, don't we? It's just that neither of us is able to tell anyone when that might be. And it sort of appears out of nowhere and just happens. So, yeah, apologies for not being around the last couple of weeks. I know I've missed the show.
Yeah, I have too. I actually had a dream about podcasting. But then I also had a dream that I was having tea with Dawn French and Craig Charles in Dawn French's house.
I had a dream that everyone was trying to kill me. And that instead I had to kill them. People would be like, there was a, you know, this huge number of people in this sort of, what felt like a game almost. And they were all coming for me. Now, I don't know if that's anything to do with the fact that I recently watched the very wonderful Squid Game on Netflix, a South Korean drama show that is beyond compare, in my opinion. And that somehow managed to influence my dream state. But, let's just say I'll keep the solid recommendation for Squid Game if you haven't already seen it.
Okay, well, thanks for the recommendation. Sorry to hear that your subconscious was posing somewhat of a...
It's been a difficult week. It could have been anything.
I know, mate. I know. But you, you know, you come out shining from all of these things.
As I've said, let's hope so.
Many times before, he might be in his 40s, but he still looks great in a tank top and shorties.
I mean, you've literally never said that, but I thank you for the words anyway.
Yeah, will do again. Let's get into some news then. The BBC wrote this week that researchers from the computer science departments of Birmingham and Surrey universities discovered that unauthorized contactless payments of as much as £1,000 can be made on locked iPhones by exploiting how an Apple Pay feature designed to help commuters pay quickly at ticket barriers works with Visa. Now, the problem, the researchers say, applies to Visa cards only and those that are set up in express transit mode on an iPhone. Now, do you just before we go forward, it's quite key to understand this. Do you have you used express transit or similar?
Ian? I use it all the time.
It's essentially you don't have to unlock your phone or verify with Face ID. You just hold the phone against a terminal like in the London Underground or on a bus in Manchester or wherever it takes contactless, and unlike a payment in a shop, the ticket barrier is saying, I am a ticket barrier, therefore you do not need to authenticate. So it's not a simple hack. The BBC said it requires a small commercially available piece of radio equipment to be placed near the phone. Doesn't go into further detail about what that piece of equipment is.
Well, no.
But that piece of equipment tricks the iPhone into believing that it's dealing with a ticket barrier. So essentially, the guard is down because it's like, okay, ticket barrier. Don't need authorization, but also there's a small limit because it's contactless, right? But then at the same time, an Android phone in this experiment running an application developed by the researchers is used to relay a signal from the iPhone to a contactless payment terminal, But because the iPhone thinks it's paying a ticket barrier, it doesn't need to be unlocked.
Right. Meanwhile,
the iPhone's communication with the payment terminal are themselves modified to fool it into thinking that the iPhone has been unlocked and a payment has been authorized. And that allowed a high-value transaction, in this case, £1,000 of the researcher's own
money,
to be made without putting in a PIN or using a fingerprint or facial recognition or anything. Now, Apple blamed Visa, and Visa said that the exploit wasn't practical outside of the lab. Both were apparently made aware of the hack, the potential hack a year ago, the BBC said. And I'm inclined to side here with Visa because this is one of these sort of things where it is a, you know, it's kind of I mean, it's just so hard to do and requires such an incredible setup to pull off. You know, we had a question in our newsroom. Someone asked me about this, like, you know, are we covering it? Can we add insight on this? And I said, look, they said, you know, are we going to start getting hacked terminals? And I said, no, like, we're not, because this system works because of a huge amount of extra equipment, bespoke apps being developed, you know, a single route of exploit being taken advantage of here that would never ever be in place in the real world. Realistically, the way this would work is somebody would steal your phone and take it back to the lab and then do it, but within which time you've also got things like fraud prevention, you've got iPhones being remotely disconnected or blocked or what have you. And even if a payment went through, that is why we have regulators, that's why we have banks that, you know, take the fall for fraud in most cases for the average person. So the realistic threat of this is extremely minor, but nonetheless, it's pretty interesting that it works, and it's particularly interesting that Apple and Visa knew it worked a year ago and hasn't, at least that we know, been addressed.
Well, I think that's a big problem. I mean, the idea that a vulnerability like this can exist and not be patched seems odd to me, and I can't say who's to blame, but it does sound like the sort of thing that you could put preventions in place to protect somehow. I don't know. I mean, who knows how that system even works, but it does sound like the sort of thing where presumably they need to do something about the way that transaction works. In terms of communicating how small it is in value, because actually I don't know if I'm right in saying this, but that when you're billed by Transport for London, it doesn't happen at the exact moment you go through the gate. It's totted up later on.
That's right.
So presumably there would be a way. There must be a way for Apple to sort of manage that. But anyway, it's kind of irrelevant. I completely agree. You couldn't make this work outside the lab. It's the same as the card skimming thing. You know, it isn't actually that easy to do it in practice. You'd need to have a merchant account and all this kind of other stuff in order for it to work. So I can sort of see them kind of finding it not that practical. But that said, you know, if you were, I don't know, positioned yourself outside a ticket gate, dressed in a falsely bought Transport for London uniform, and you know, you had a little briefcase next to you and you set it up, you could turn over quite some money if people didn't realize that you weren't an official staff member. So it warrants being fixed, I would say, but I'm just I'm not surprised that these vulnerabilities exist, because they absolutely always will.
I need to pick you up on a very interesting and surprising observation that you just made or made hypothetically. What Transport for London or tube operator that you have seen in, like, ever has had a briefcase?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there must be another way of doing it.
That's the alarm bell.
But if you think about how they work, if they're standing by the gate, you know, they could have a bag at their feet. You wouldn't give it a second thought.
I see what
you
mean.
I'm sure you wouldn't. You know, like, I'm not... Okay, a briefcase might not be a great example, but, you know, that it could be a backpack, or it could be something they're wearing under their clothes, or anything, really. Like, it doesn't sound to me like it would be impossible for a fake London Underground employee to have enough equipment on them to make this work theoretically.
They'd be better off
how they would do it. I don't know. But
they'd be better off dressing up as a turnstile, you know, pantomime
that would be
horse,
funnier.
Like a pantomime horse, you know.
Yes,
and fool people that way. No, I don't know. I mean, One of the reasons why this intrigued me is because there is a lot of development in the UK going into contactless systems. Obviously, in a post-COVID, post-cash world, you know, contactless becomes key. And over the last few years, we've seen the growth of value that is permitted on an individual contactless transaction rise from, you know, what was it, about 20 quid at one point, and it's now over £100. We talked about
Didn't we say five quid the other week?
You know,
the original.
It went from basically being the amount that you would pay for a coffee to now something that you can pay for, you know, a dinner at a pretty high-end restaurant for two.
Well, Waitrose makes a song and dance about being able to pay up to £10,000 on Apple Pay.
But that's Apple Pay, and Apple Pay requires it requires this. And so I sort of feel that if you were somebody who, I mean, if you wanted to, that is the kind of scenario where you could see something like this being used or pressuring somebody to do it at, you know, at a checkout in a market somewhere where you don't need to be quite as obvious as a London Underground staffer holding a briefcase next to a turnstile to be spotted. But actually, you know,
well,
you could...
also, I mean, if you're after defrauding people from money, have you seen those little things around where you can tap to give a £5 donation to charity?
I've seen, yes, I have seen similar. Yeah,
you could just do that. No one would have any idea. If you put together a decent, you know, little metal box and popped it in, you know, near Waterloo Station or something, and said, you know, help the troops, donate £5 today, and slapped up a picture of a poppy, I reckon you could make quite a lot of money out of a little scam like that without anyone ever being the wiser, actually.
You seem to be very knowledgeable about this, Ian.
I've always thought that my brain does work a little bit like a criminal's. It's a good job I've turned my life, you know, into one that's focused on, well, mostly not crime. I mean, you know, did download the occasional TV episode back in the day, but
yeah.
I think we'll probably let that go. But yeah, you know, I'm not really a hardcore criminal. But, I do think about these things. I always think about stuff like this. Like, I'm interested in loopholes, I think. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, me too. And that's one of the reasons I find this so interesting, because it's not irrelevant to think about these hacks, even though they are widely impractical. But as we've seen in the past, very impractical, large-scale bits of technology do tend to get shrunk down. And it's the kind of thing to maybe keep in mind when we develop technology further, that there are technical ways these can be possible. Have you defrauded anybody standing outside of Waterloo Station? If so, let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. That email address is back in use. hello@uktechshow.com. Let us know who you defrauded, how you did it, and what you spent the fortune on. Well, I was going to make an off-color joke about stealing money, but it doesn't really work with Ofcom because no one really accuses it of stealing money.
No.
But
it's best as we don't get sued, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And Ofcom's not really done anything wrong in this instance. The Guardian wrote that said media regulator, Ofcom, has introduced a new service to make it easier for customers to switch broadband supplier to get a better deal. Yes, we're talking about broadband, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to pull out your shoehorns and wave them in the air like you just don't have an opinion.
We've hit the matter.
We have, yeah.
It's bingo.
It is, yeah. And later on, I'm going to talk about a chamois leather because I learned from my mum what one was this morning. The new process is called One Touch Switch, and it's hoped it'll encourage people to seek out better deals after research found that more than two-fifths of people in the UK were put off switching broadband suppliers because it's just such an incredible pain in the arse. Now, we've talked about this before because people can already switch between providers that use Openreach's broadband network. That includes BT, of course, but also Sky, TalkTalk, and plenty of others. But that process requires a customer only to contact their new supplier, and then that supplier takes care of the rest. However, as The Guardian continued to write, until now, customers hoping to change networks or technologies, such as what I did recently and moving from Virgin Media's network to GigaClear, had to deal with both the new and the old supplier simultaneously. And Ofcom's research found that a quarter of customers making such a switch faced attempts by their provider to stop them. And this is very true in my experience, although I had to say it was very fun for me. I do love, and I get a weird, like, sort of, I don't know, schadenfreudery kind of pleasure out of knowing more than the customer service person. So when Virgin told me that, you know, they absolutely guarantee they have the fastest speed broadband in the country, I said, well, let me correct you and tell you where you're wrong.
That's such a weird claim to make.
I can't remember the exact wording they made, but essentially they're like, you know, of a non-fiber to the premises house, like, yes, you probably do have the best download speed available to me, and certainly you have. But I was like, that's not the point. The point is, I value upload. Your uploads are basically stuck in 2008, and they are terrible.
They were not as bad for you as they are for me.
No, but it was one of the points that I got them on, and they understood they were dealing with someone who cared more about broadband than probably most people. So they let me leave, but it was kind of frustrating. I imagine
I usually start those conversations with something along the lines of, "This is not a negotiation. Please just end my contract and tell me what the date will be," because I'm not having those conversations with them. Once I've decided to leave, it's not. Unless I am trying to renegotiate for a cheaper price, it's one of those things where I'm not going to have a conversation about it. I don't have time or the interest.
You must have been a barrel of laughs being broken up with as a boyfriend in school.
What, you'd just be like, well, that's fine, moving on.
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. But, you know, it's I view broadband, well, I mean, having said that, I do take broadband very seriously. Fortunately, I feel like you break up with fewer people in your life on the whole. I mean, this might not be true of everyone. It's certainly true for me. I've probably broken up with more service providers than I have women.
I don't think I have.
Well, I mean, if you think about all the service providers, though, Nate, I mean, well, who knows? Let's not get into how many girlfriends you've had in your life. It doesn't seem like a productive avenue for us.
Well, particularly not since that both my mother and my wife listen to this show.
Yes, but they both know you, and they've already heard the story about that time you tried to buy your brother's girlfriend.
In my defense, I tried to get him to agree to swap her for our garden slide. He didn't want the garden slide. So
plus, he could already use it, presumably.
And I had a £20 BT phone call, a phone card. And I thought that was more than adequate compensation for him to give me his girlfriend.
I think it's both hilarious that you tried that and also very endearing that you were prepared to admit such a thing in the current day and age. I mean, we were all young once.
Well, I'm only prepared to admit it because Andy had the good sense to tell me where to stick it. I think had he have followed through with my pressure and allowed me to have acquired his girlfriend, it would have raised some very serious questions about all
of
us.
I mean, I've got to say that I do believe that this would have been nixed at the girlfriend point. Like, I don't think she would have got along with it, no matter what you two Muppets had agreed.
Well, we'll never know, will we? We'll never.
No, we will never know. Unless we could get in touch with her. If you're that girlfriend, please email. Hello at UK Tech, whatever the bloody email address is.
Yeah, we were about 8 or 9 years old at the time.
Yes,
you know, should point out this. We're not going back to, you know, late teens.
No, it wasn't last week. Can you remember her name though? Oh, you don't have to say it.
I remember her older sister's name.
Well, that's something, I suppose.
My mum is listening live, and she says her name was Libby. And I think she might be right, you know.
Really?
But I don't want to go any further than that because
no,
I hate
that's
to
fine.
Identify. Plus, you know, goodness only knows who listens to this out in the real world. She may be a listener.
Well, I'm sure she probably has no idea this negotiation even took place. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, well, let's just put it on record that I apologize for, you know, of equating her value to that of a second-hand slide.
Or a £20 phone card.
I apologise. Although this was the 90s and money, you know, it slides cost more then. And
yeah, and £20 would have been quite a lot if you were nine.
Yeah, and this was Rotherham.
And I'm assuming that this was the phone card was not something you'd purchased with your own hard-earned money. I'm sure that was something your mother had given you to call in case of emergencies.
Well, she'd also given me a brother.
And a slide.
If memory serves, it was my gran that bought me the slide.
So it doesn't really matter. Same basic principle. None of it was yours anyway, really.
Yeah. Well, it's my story. And I hold it close to my heart.
It's great. Anyway, carry on.
What were we talking about?
I don't even remember.
Ofcom. So, the plan on this one-touch switch process, as they call it, it's going to work similarly to how it works if you're trying to switch energy providers, which many people at the moment will have had the misfortune to have to think about, where you go to your new provider and you say, "Hello, new provider," and they go, "Ian?
Hi, this is new provider.
I would like to give you money in exchange for one of your power services."
What a coincidence, because we'd love to have it.
Excellent. And from there goes the process. They go off and figure out who you're currently with. They handle the switchover, and you just get a letter, you know, with a sad face emoji on the front from your old supplier saying, "Sorry, you're leaving." And then you respond, "Sorry, you went out of business because of the price of gas," or whatever. And then the new provider just simply bills you and you go forwards. There's no negotiating with your old provider. They're not allowed to sort of come back to you and say, "Oh, we know you're leaving, but maybe you'd like to not leave." Can't do that. You're basically gone. So
it's
that's the way,
the same as the mobile phones system
as it is now. Yes, again, never used to be the case, but yeah, you can do it by text on mobile phones now. And now, or rather by April 2023, every provider in the UK of broadband has to offer this. So if you did what I did and you decided you don't want to go, you don't want to be with Virgin Media anymore, you want to go with GigaClear, you simply sign up to GigaClear and say, "I want to move to you," and they handle the disconnection for Virgin.
I like the sound of that, because it's a much less involved process. It's just two computers sort of duking it out. And I imagine that the computers don't argue about retaining your services. I'm watching quite a lot of Star Trek The Next Generation at the moment, so I just see this as Data sort of telling the ship's computer something. You know, that kind of lack of, you know, empathy / emotion.
There's a little bit more to it, I suppose, when you start thinking about having to ship equipment back. But that's basically automated, isn't it? Someone's just sending you an email telling you how to send their routers back or what have you. But
yes,
you're right.
And I imagine that, I mean, probably quite a lot of companies don't really ask for equipment back these days. They surely, I mean, I can't imagine Sky asks for that, you know, their very cheap router back. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, there is another thing that's worth noting. I spotted this in the ISP review story that covered this, not anywhere else, that BT has suggested that Ofcom is not actually going far enough with this. BT spokesman said, quote, "We also want the new process to extend to switching pay TV providers so that the benefits of seamless switching are not undermined for those who take a triple play bundle of voice, broadband and pay TV." And I'm intrigued by this because I don't quite know how this will play out. Because
well,
if
it doesn't
you sign
really
up,
work, does it?
Well, this is the thing. If you sign up today with Virgin, you are offered broadband, landline phone, television, wireless phone, potentially. You know, it's a quad play offering, and
that's only going to get strengthened now they're owners of O2.
O2, exactly. So it's not necessarily going to be as simple as just switching off your broadband. Like, we only had Virgin Media. We don't have a landline. We don't have TV. We only have broadband, so it's easy, but it will be interesting to see how that switch is facilitated.
I just don't think it will work for that. Those things are so complicated. I've written enough of those stories in my life where you try, and I remember doing this. I think I might have even been at CNET. You know, you try and look into how much a Virgin Media package is going to cost, so you can tell people. But there's no answer to that question, because it just depends entirely on how the server's feeling at that particular minute, and does it want to offer you this deal or that deal or whatever. You know, it's actually extremely difficult. And Sky used to be the worst for pricing. Like, trying to find out what a Sky package costs was like some sort of black magic.
Well, it will undoubtedly affect everybody at some point in their future, because we all need broadband. Certainly anyone who listens to this show needs internet, and at some point you will switch providers, so it will be something you have to deal with. And bundling is getting more popular than ever, so they're gonna have to sort that out. John in our live chat says, as an O2 user, I still haven't seen any advantages to the Virgin merger. Thought my coverage might improve. I think probably not, because wasn't O2 the MVNO behind Virgin Mobile?
No, it's far more complicated than that, in quite a delightful way. Ooh. It used to be EE, so obviously it was pretty good and quite fast. And then when they switched to 5G, they did a deal with Vodafone, which is supposed to run till 2025 or something like that, or maybe even a lot further than that. This was before they bought O2. So a Virgin MVNO, if you sign up now for 5G, you're going to be on Vodafone. But what happens now they own O2? Surely they're going to want to save money and completely cut out that MVNO agreement with Vodafone. So I have no idea how it works, but it's hilariously complicated.
I'm trying to think if there's a way of retrofitting that example into my story of me, my brother, and his girlfriend, and the slide.
Oh, I'm sure, given enough time, you could think of it. Virgin, yeah, has yeah. got a girlfriend, but it's really trying very hard to break up with her, because its head has been turned by a delightful new woman, O2. Gendering these things, I mean, in a way that is probably quite inappropriate.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think this has run its course. let's just move on. But if you are interested in telling us what you think about this, you can, of course, let us know at hello@uktechshow.com. Give us your opinion if you think this will work, and how you would split up. Well, with your girlfriend, certainly you could do that, but really how you would split up the pay TV conundrum that we think Ofcom's going to have to come up with a solution for. hello@uktechshow.com. Had an email that came in that I just wanted to pick out here, actually, Ian. Came in from Rupert while we were away. Rupert says, you touched on sci-fi in episode 250, and I would encourage you to discuss your recommendations from time to time. I'm partway through Project Hail Mary. It's the Andy Weir book, which is good
fun. I've read
it.
So have I.
It's
excellent.
It's good fun, although I am trying not to read it too quickly. I mean, he sent me that a couple of weeks ago, so he may have finished it now. And this is an excellent idea, and one I wholeheartedly endorse, and we are going to do it. Now, I was going to say, I've read a lot of sci-fi recently. I've actually, funnily enough, I've been reading a lot of Jules Verne.
Interesting.
Yesterday I finished Journey to the Center of the Earth, and I'm now partway through 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So I'll talk about that. I was going to do an extra message. Now, I don't know if Rupert is a patron. So if we do, well, we are going to do an extra message about sci-fi recommendations. If Rupert's not a patron, I will send him the MP3 as
Good
a thank
idea.
You for this idea. And everyone else will get that as an extra message. That is the kind of stuff we do on Extra Message.
Do you want to take a guess how long it took me to read the book of Project Hail Mary?
It's either going to be very little time or very long time. You do take long toilet breaks, so I'm going to guess a short time, 2 days.
I did it in a little bit over 24 hours.
Yeah,
I was on holiday at the time, so it does make sense. But that's the thing about Andy Weir books, like that you're reading it sort of feeling sort of a bit gobsmacked and kind of like, this is ludicrous.
Yes,
but you can't put the damn thing down. Fair play to him.
Eminently readable. Is
a very, very readable.
Protagonist sounds the same, but
well,
like,
yes,
good stories.
But actually, I find it refreshing in a way, because, it, you know, I'm a writer. I would like to write a fiction book at some point, but I'm terrified of it because it's so hard to, you know, break through, and people are very sniffy about books even now. Like, you know, a lot of people be very down-nosed at certain authors. Not least, actually, Ready Player One, Ernest Cline. And I actually, that was a very readable book as well, even though it's basically just a list of things that happened in the 80s. But even so, it's still quite an exciting story.
Well, I recently read Tom Merritt's latest Project Vera on Audible, actually. And because he is a pretty prolific writer of science fiction novels. In that vein, he's also a pretty prolific podcaster. He's here to tell us what's been happening in the wider world of tech this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, the Oculus Go gets unlocked for hobbyists. We think we know why Netflix is getting into games now. Amazon announces a lot of ways to spy on yourself, but it's almost all processed on device now, so Amazon won't be spying on you too, always. Also, Nreal's idea to sell you smart glasses as a display alternative, and how the U.S. wants to crack down on SIM swapping. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Not a great deal of crossover this week. I'll be on Daily Tech News Show on Tuesday coming.
Excellent.
Whatever date that is, the 5th of October, I think. Yes. Thank you, Tom. And thank you, Ian. And thank you, everyone who's listening live. We've had a good live audience this week. And thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. I think that'll do it. Unless there's anything you'd like to add, Ian?
No. I thought that was actually a pretty tight and comprehensive show.
Yeah, I think so too. We didn't get to the chamois leather conversation.
Oh yeah, what's the deal with that? You're going to save it for another week?
No, I was just on the phone to my mum and she mentioned a chamois leather. I said, what the hell's a chamois leather? I've never known. She told me what a chamois leather was and I went on my way. I said, is it a bit like having a toffee shop or a shoehorn? And then I said, shoehorns, I should mention this on the podcast. So I just did.
You've never owned a car though, have you? So a chamois leather would never have been something in your wheelhouse.
No, but I've driven in cars and I've used one without realizing that that's...
Yes,
that's,
well, they're quite common for demisting windows.
Apparently so.
But also, I was going to say that the chamois has been completely replaced by microfiber cloths these days.
Oh. So you're saying there's a tech angle to this?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you could describe microfiber cloths as tech, but, you know, yeah, it used to be that everyone would be chamoying their car, but now, no, it's all microfiber stuff.
Fascinating. Goodbye, everybody. Okay, though, the fade-in's coming a little late. Now we'll say goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.